Yo, TWG. G. Safe, gang. Yeah.
Yo, der eine aus Australien, der andere aus Wien.
TWG.
Jacob und Gabriel spitten hier im Beat. Der eine redet schlechtes Englisch, der andere scheiß Deutsch. Wir spitten hier die Rhymes so fresh. Komm, verschwind ganz schnell, sonst clasht's. TWG represent.
Soundcheck, checkity-check-check, 1, 2, 3. This is a sound check for the Schauen wir mal readings by Jacob Moss and Gabriel Schaffler, the guides to the worst guide to living in Austria.
Oh my God!
Hey TVG gang and anybody that's found themselves here, look, if you have you just found yourself here, you're about to become part of the TVG gang. TVG standing for the worst guide. And we would welcome you with open arms, but don't expect open legs. That was distasteful, I'm sorry. This is a reading. I should keep things respectful. So as you know, from last week, Gabriel and I have decided that we are going to do something of a audiobook for Schauen wir mal, the book that we published and hit the bestseller charts not so long ago. And I'll be reading my chapters in English because we thought we had a lot of people at the readings, the live readings that we did around the country. A lot of people were asking, hey, is it in English? We would love if it's in English. We're not going to publish it in English at this stage because it's very expensive to print a book or a lot of books. So we're going to rather read it to you in English, my chapters, and maybe even Gabriel's chapters on the other side of this. But let's see. I don't want to promise anything. Anyway, we're going chapter for chapter. And my next chapter up in English is called A Tragic Love Story of a Young Aussie Boy Falling in Love with a City. You know that movie, Before Sunrise? A guy and a girl meet on a train. They get out in Vienna and have one magical night together. I had a similar experience with a Canadian guy. Well, but it wasn't so magic or romantic. We ended up on the Gürtel of Vienna in the red light district. But that's a story for another time. First, let's begin with a scene of me and this Canadian guy that I by chance met on the train from Czech Republic to Vienna, running down Kärntnerstrasse of Vienna's city centre. I'm underdressed for the winter cold, like the inexperienced Aussie I am, while also overweight with a 30-kilo rucksack bouncing up and down on my back. But absolutely nothing can steal from the look of genuine wonder in my eyes as they dart left and right at the buildings lining the boulevard that I'm running down. We've just arrived in Vienna, fresh off the train, and are hoping to score standing seats at the opera. No matter what's on the program, €3 for standing seats at a world-famous opera house is worth running for a poor backpacker. As I run, my eyes find it hard to send the message to my brain, you're running through a setting like in the books you read growing up in Australia. I keep stopping and staring. Look at that building, I'd yell to no one in particular. Then I'd screw up my face, realizing that the awe-inspiring building steeped in history housed a H&M. Come on, the Canadian would yell. We're not going to make it. And we'd keep on running, me gawking at the buildings, bumping into the odd person who'd give me a look like they want their stare to evaporate me into dust. I try my best to pronounce Entschuldigung correctly, but it would always come out sounding like chewing gum or enchiladas. What I'm describing is the story of a young 21-year-old backpacker falling in love with the city. Doing a Euro backpacking trip is something most Australians do. They interrail their way around the continent, hostel hopping, bar hopping and bed hopping, and catch a few sights and landmarks in between. Most go back to Australia with a bunch of stories. I did too, but then I returned. As my Euro trip was something deeper for me, something changed in me during the 4 months with my backpack in Europe. When visiting my high school English professor, who I have a mentor-like relationship with, after getting back from my backpacking adventure, he greeted me with a long look and then what he considers to be the more European version of my name, Jacques. You are now Jake und Jacques, half Australian and half European, he said to me. I mean, he could have gone for a German variation like Jakob, but thank God he didn't. I smiled at him. He saw it too. And when are you going back to live there? He asked. He could see that I was in love and knew before I did that I'd be going back. I have lived in Vienna for several years now. And despite its challenges and its people default setting of being closed, I'm still hopelessly in love with the city. A walk through the old city center still has the same effect on me. I still gawk and trip over people, fanboying on the old Europe Vienna represents for me. I'm still the Aussie suburban kid walking through a grand city that has experienced a lot. Life under an ancient civilization, an empire, devastating and crippling war, a period of consequences for a war and a genocide, peaceful times filled with music and greats of culture creating amazing things. Old Vienna has seen some shit. I've always been drawn to Europe. I would have been one of the few Australians that knew of Klimt and Egon Schiele before visiting a museum in Vienna. What can I say? We're a sporting nation, not a culture-appreciating one. Vienna has layers and roots that suburban Australia couldn't offer me, and for some reason my disposition had me drawn towards that. Don't get me wrong. I'm always torn between the two, Jake and Jacques. I miss waking up to the explosion of birdsong. I miss my family. I miss the bush and the smell of eucalyptus. I also miss the spiritual connection to the land that Australia has that we have Indigenous Australians to thank for. About that, like Austria, my country has a tragic identity crisis too. It also still attempts to scrub off a period of history that makes it who and what it is. In Australia, it's a colonial stain, a stain that the people of the country refuse to acknowledge and to put right for the sake of Indigenous Australians who are still suffering from it. Austria's stain is the war they claim to have been victims in, mere spectators of history, but know very well, deep down inside, they were perpetrators of a horrible history. If only both countries would stop scrubbing, simply point at the stains and admit, we did that. And we're sorry. Perhaps a lot of the trauma that obviously haunts both of them would be released and given a chance to heal. And the trauma is still obvious today, including in Vienna. You see, me walking around Vienna with a big goofy smile on my face makes me stand out. Not because of the people of the city never smile. They do. But if you look around a subway carriage any time of the day, the dominant facial expression is one of tension. Somebody once called it the Viennese resting face. This grumpy disposition is something they have become renowned for, the Viennese. And they don't reject it. Rauzen, suden und grantig sein. They accept this as part of their personality and even lean into it proudly, mainly for comic effect. But there's always some truth to the joke, oder? I overheard an Oma in Vienna once say, "Wien is ein bisschen schier," Aber da bin ich heute daheim. Then sorry about the accent. That was my best go. And that pretty much sums up life in Vienna for the locals. Well, kind of. One of the most trending hashtags on social media in Austria is Wien Liebe. It's complicated, I guess. The world stamps this city almost every year with the most livable city. The locals will quote this and confirm it one moment, but curse the city as if it's an annoying husband or wife they can't stand the sight of the next. I'm about to do some serious crushing on what makes Vienna a city with a siren song that keeps clawing me back. But I first want to say to the people of Vienna, wake up and smell the tulips that this city plants fresh and new at the beginning of every spring that makes the city look so damn glorious. As tulips are not planted everywhere in the world by a city's gardening department, whose job I envy full-heartedly. It is not to be taken for granted that when you're sick, free healthcare is around the corner. It's not to be taken for granted that you can get a glass of top-quality mountain water by simply turning on the tap at home. It is not to be taken for granted that when you can't afford housing, state-funding housing is an option. Other countries are envious of this. Featured in the Guardian newspaper in 2023. If you think decent homes for all is an impossible dream, take a look at Vienna. You have achieved what others believe to be an impossible dream, Vienna. That a mother and father can be with their child when they first arrive in the world. That quality education is free for all. That the crime rate is so low. That you have one of the most comprehensive and sophisticated public transport systems in the world. That there are elevators at every station for those who need them. That the city provides toys in sand pits for kids at parks. That there are hundreds of free culture events like the Donauinselfest thrown each year. That a standing ticket at the opera costs only 3 bloody euros. That there are a wealth of support services for those in need of them. And you're still grantig? I get it. It's all not perfect. There's a teacher shortage. There's slight delays on the U-Bahn sometimes. But humans are not perfect, and neither are the societies and infrastructure they build. So shooting for perfection here should not be our expectation. I think, in 2023, Vienna is as close humans can get to a utopia. I'm not saying it is utopian, but I'm saying life is peaceful here for a reason. A past newspaper editor of mine said that one sign of a peaceful and well-running society is that it has ridiculous headlines on its front pages. Should I list them for you? Teigtaschen Mafia, noch mehr Fabriken aufgeflogen. In case you missed this story, several underground factories were found around Vienna that were producing tons of Chinese dumplings. Now I know I'm sounding like some condescending parent, but that is not my intention. It would just be a shame for a city to lose what earns a gold medal every year because of people not appreciating what they've got and holding on tight to it. It wouldn't be the first time this has happened in Vienna. At least everybody should be enjoying it while the good times roll. Many complain that Vienna moves slow, that trends reach its city borders 5 years later than anywhere else in the world. Yeah, Vienna moves at its own pace. And I love that. I get it. I'm romanticizing a sluggish system that places a lot of bureaucracy in the way of new things and progress in the city. But as the rest of the world wakes up to the fact that rapid and constant change and growth is not sustainable, maybe the people of Vienna will come to appreciate the slow pace. You must leave Vienna to return to it with a newfound appreciation. For me, it feels like returning to a comfy old pair of slippers. So here's what I recommend. The Vienna population does a city swap with any other city in this world. Okay, except Vancouver or Sydney. This would be unfair due to their advantage of having a beautiful coast. Let's go with Buenos Aires, for example. Imagine swapping the Viennese for Argentinians in their respective cities. The Stephansplatz and every Platz in the city would be alive with people doing the tango in the street and food stands, while the only sound on the street in Buenos Aires will be the Viennese complaining about how sour Heiss it is. We swap for a week and then we swap back. Just take a moment to imagine that for a second. Are you imagining it? Okay, now you're arriving back in Vienna. How does it feel? Safe, secure, and comfy, right? I'm not saying Buenos Aires sucks. I've lived there and it has many things to offer that this most livable city index doesn't take into account. Besides its numerous problems, Buenos Aires is a lively, colorful city where people are truly open and chat to each other, no matter if they're strangers. On the other extreme, if you want to make a Viennese person seriously question where they are in the world, greet them spontaneously on the street and follow it up with some friendly small talk. And this, in my opinion, is exactly what I think Vienna is lacking in its utopia. Regular, daily instances of strangers interacting with each other. It has been proven that such interaction makes people significantly happier. We're social creatures, after all. Vienna, the city, is incomparably great, but the way people socially interact with each other is often puzzlingly awkward and dysfunctional. And I really mean dysfunctional. When your neighbor calls the police on you because you have a few friends over and have the music on too loud, instead of simply knocking on your door and asking for you to keep the noise down, this is a dysfunctional way to deal with each other. It's asocial, and that's why I think it's common practice in Vienna to call the police on your loud neighbors. Not because your police calling neighbor is an asshole, but because calling the police allows them to avoid social interaction. I had a situation with my new neighbor in which they had complained about a bamboo fence I had left down by the garbage bins. I had hoped the garbage collectors would have taken it, but they hadn't, and the fence was still lying there, and Helmut wasn't happy about it. Fair enough. I apologized to him and told him I'd take care of it straight away. Good old Helmut shook his head and said, "Okay, but I think I'm going to have to report it to the Hausverwaltung." So the house management. And I said, "But we just spoke about it and we resolved the issue. Why would you need to tell the Hausverwaltung still?" "Because it should be reported," he told me. He wanted to make sure I faced consequences for stepping outside the lines, even though, as two humans, we'd spoken together and found the solution. When I explained this to some of my Viennese friends, they just laughed. "Yeah, that's so Viennese," they said to me, as if it was a permanent characteristic of the city's social etiquette that could not be changed. I found this hard to accept over the years, and every time I've expressed this to Gabriel, he's simply told me, "Well, on behalf of all the Viennese, if you don't like it, schleich dich." But I feel like I understand the Viennese nature more these days. The Viennese default setting is to meet new people with skepticism. It is like their force field against the threat of something different and foreign. But once you crawl through the gauntlet of this skepticism that most Viennese meet you with, they are warm, kind, and funny people. Witty in their dark, sarcastic, and dry humor, a humor any Australian can relate to. I don't know where the skepticism comes from. Maybe it's inherited trauma from the past. Maybe it's just a social mechanism that is useful to ward off possible threats to their comfortable lives. I don't know, and it's not my place to analyze the psyche of a city in which psychoanalysis was created. Instead, I seek to empathize and, in turn, greet the Viennese in a way that is comfortable for them. After all, I am the interloper, the Aussie kid bumping into them on their streets because he's busy gawking at their buildings. The name of this chapter is A Tragic Love Story, as I sometimes feel my love for Vienna is unrequited love. That the city doesn't love me back. But like the most addictive, toxic relationships, Vienna will forever keep me in its grasp. So this chapter, when I was writing it, It was, I don't know, it was extremely, I loved writing this chapter because it sent me back to the first time I encountered Vienna and also made me really think about how my relationship with the city has changed and also its inhabitants has changed over the years. And like I say in this chapter, that Viennese, their default setting is the opposite to what their city's impression is that it has on the people, if you know what I mean. Like when you visit the city the first time, it's feeling super sweet and beautiful and it makes you go, wow, this place is amazing. Whereas Viennese, they make you feel like when you first meet them and first encounter them, they make you feel like you should not exist. You know, like you shouldn't be speaking to them most of the time. This is generalizing, of course. We generalize a lot in this book. But then the longer you get, you know, the Viennese, and the longer you stay in Vienna, obviously the more time you dedicate to anything, the more you get to know it and the more layers you peel back and you learn that the Viennese are just like any other humans in a big city. But I don't know where this default setting of skepticism comes from. It would be interesting to know your thoughts, TVG gang. It was funny, the one part of the story that I left out here, because this is one thing we'll do when we read these chapters to you, is that we'll give you the unedited version. So, but I never added this part in there. So with this Canadian guy that I met on the train from Czech Republic, he was sleeping in the same cabin as me in the train, and he was obsessed with the idea for some reason of visiting the red light district in Vienna. I don't know why, but anyway, we ended up on the Gürtel after the opera, and we went into this brothel where we were obviously greeted and everything, and they served us drinks that cost me so much then. Like, I hardly had any money when I first came to Vienna, Austria. I had saved up for, I think, 5 years or 2 years. I'd saved up $10,000 Australian because I, as a teenager, I was working alongside school and whatever, and uni. And so I saved up $10,000 Australian, but as soon as I walked into Europe, it was halved at that time. So it was Australian cent, and you get 50 cents for every euro. No, for every Australian dollar, you would get 50 euro cents. And yeah, this, I think I paid, I don't know, the equivalent of $20 Australian for a beer in this little brothel. And anyway, we went in there. I followed this Canadian guy because he didn't want to go alone and he was obsessed with the idea. But he also didn't want to do anything with the sex workers in there. So it turned out to just be, we got kicked out of there because we were two idiot, you know, young 20-year-olds that were just hanging out in a brothel, and the girls got fed up with us and kicked us out. But yeah, that was the part of the story where I said it's a story for another time. But anyway, that's the chapter, A Tragic Love Story of a Young Aussie Boy Falling in Love with the City. I hope you enjoyed it in English. And if you've read it in German, I would be interested to know how different it is for you. Anyway, the next chapter will be coming to you next week. Otherwise, no matter how bad you've got it, according to the Viennese, they've got it worse. Bussi and Papa.
Sure, yeah, okay.
I mag nimmer. I mag nimmer.
The Worst Guide to Living in Austria is a Worst Agency production, hosted by Jacob Moss and Gabriel Schaffler. It's dropped every Monday and available everywhere you get your podcasts.